From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 30th day of June 2020. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. The acreage and grain stocks figures were out earlier today and the market bounced. We'll talk about that with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and go through all of those numbers too. We'll also discuss the weather forecast today with Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And we'll preview the webinar that Jonathan Compass will be part of this Thursday at 11 o'clock a.m. for the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's go through some of the numbers that USDA released earlier today. It now says that farmers across the United States have or will continue to sow about 92 million acres. There's 2.2 million left to be put in the ground. That was, of course, as of June the 1st. That 92 million acre number, by the way, is down about 5% from the nearly 97 million acres that USDA had projected farmers, at least what farmers had told them they were planning to plant. That back from the March perspective plantings report. U.S. farmers just about on line with what they expected to plant back in March for the soybeans. USDA now says total crop for this year at 83.825 million acres. Some interesting numbers as well from the grain stock side. It says on farm for corn at 3.025 billion bushels. Off farm at 2.198, that for a total of 5.223 billion bushels in the bin still left to be used from last year's corn harvest and imported supply, but the trade was expecting only 4.95 billion bushels. Soybeans at 1.386 billion in the bin. The expectation from the trade was 1.392 billion bushels. And a couple of other items. Here are the top five soybean producing states in the nation. They are in order: Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, and Indiana. The top five corn producing states are Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Kansas. In Chicago, corn futures finished higher on those numbers. July contract up 12 and a quarter at 338 and a half. December 350 and a half, up 15 and three quarters. And next year's March up 15 and three quarters at 361 and a quarter. July beans 17 and three quarters higher at $8.84 and a quarter. November at 882 and a quarter, up 20 and three quarters of a cent. Bean oil 36 cents higher. Bean meal up $5.80. July soft red winter wheat 4 and a half higher. It finished at 490 for the day. June cattle down $3.35. Feeders were off 65 cents and lean hogs down 20 cents for the afternoon. Here to help us make sense of some of what happened in Chicago after the release of the USDA reports is Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. What'd you think of those numbers when you saw them?
They were wild, Todd. I'll tell you what, we were hoping for a little bit of friendliness coming out of the government for a change, and wow, they made it all up in one report, didn't they? You know, it was just amazing. Even the most bullish people were thinking that we'd be lucky to get to 94 million acres by the government talking about it. And here we are down to 92 million acres of corn. Big surprise. And of course, with the funds, they covered a bunch yesterday, and I think they covered a whole bunch more again today on this market.
Now, some of those acres coming from North Dakota, which was down 7.7% on corn acres from last year, but they're not in the top five corn producing states in any form. They are one of the top five soybean producing states, by the way. I'm wondering, you know, it's not only that we lost corn acres, but the total of corn and soybean acreage was down too.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's sort of like what happened to some of this ground, and how did so much not get planted this year? Last year we had some really bad conditions and a lot of things that way, and it looks like NASS is saying that the reduction come from, you know, some bad conditions there and very wet conditions in some areas that way. But you know, we're looking at somewhere just shy of 7 million acres that didn't get planted that was projected to be planted. And that's a lot of acres out there. And, you know, in the soybean acres, you know, 83.8, we were expecting an 84.7. So, you know, about 1 million acres less of beans planted or switched over. But, you know, that was above what the initial planting ideas were. So we did gain a few acres of beans, but, you know, fortunately we lost some acres of corn, because this is what the farmer really needs, is just not have as many acres out there. If we can see the weather be bad and, let's just say, out west a little farther, extra hot and extra dry during pollination, why, it could give us a little chance to get back up a little bit here in this corn market.
The grain stocks figure must have tempered that some, because there were 300 million bushels or thereabouts more corn than the trade had expected on hand.
Yeah, you know, that sort of buffered the corn a bit, but, you know, and it did come back in. The corn stocks were at 5.223 versus the 4.951 expected, and that was just about the same as it was last year. So we've got some hefty stocks that we didn't think we would have at this time. Boy, and I'll tell you what, this whole deal with seeing China not buy any is being, it's not good. We would like to see some hefty purchases by the Chinese and the phase one deal on this corn to help us get back in shape. And I'll tell you what, this COVID increasing and maybe cutting down some of the driving sure isn't helping its ethanol use either.
Yeah, bottom line still, though, when you put all those numbers together, you can get down to what, around a 2.7 billion bushel carryover by the time we get to the end of next year, and that's way better than the above three that we saw.
Oh my gosh, you know, if we can keep it, now it's, and used to be to keep it under two to be good. Now, this time this year, it's going to be to keep it under three to maybe get us back up to where we can maybe break even and make some money and not have to rely quite as much on the government to make it through this year.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. Well, as we continue here through the closing market report for this Tuesday afternoon, let's check some other numbers from the USDA. The crop progress report released yesterday afternoon, it shows 4% of the corn crop around the nation is silking. That's behind the five-year average, which is about 7%. The condition of the crop is 57% good, 16% excellent. That's up 1 percentage point, by the way, in the combined categories, and it came in the excellent side. Soybeans emerged at 95%, 91% of that crop is normally up and growing. 14% of the crop is blooming, and that's ahead of the 11% five-year average. So the condition of the crop, 58% good, 13% excellent. And that, too, is up 1 percentage point in the excellent category. Last week, it was 58% good and 12% excellent. Wheat harvest across the United States now has proceeded to 41% complete, and the five-year average is also 41%. The condition of the crop, 42% good and 10% excellent. Now here are updates from some of the state statisticians.
This is Melissa Couch, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. Precipitation limited Iowa farmers to 4.5 days suitable for field work during the week ending June 28, 2020. Northeast Iowa saw the highest rainfall and some severe weather. Fieldwork activities included applying fertilizer, spraying, harvesting hay, and hauling grain. Topsoil moisture levels rated 2% very short, 9% short, 81% adequate, and 8% surplus. There were scattered reports of corn beginning to silk in the state. Corn condition rated 85% good to excellent. Soybean emergence reached 98%. Over 2 weeks ahead of last year and 5 days ahead of the five-year average. Soybean blooming reached 16%, almost 2 weeks ahead of last year and 5 days ahead of average. Soybean condition rated 83% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Melissa Couch.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Temperatures were near normal and rainfall was above average for most of Illinois last week. There were 5.4 days suitable for field work around the state, and farmers used them for harvesting wheat, baling hay, and planting some double crop soybeans. Topsoil moisture supplies were rated 6% very short, 18 short, 66 adequate, and 10% surplus, and that is wetter than 1 week ago. The average rainfall for the state was 1.65 inches compared to 0.7 inches normally. Temperatures averaged 73.9 degrees and ranged from 1 degree below to 1 degree above normal for the week. Winter wheat harvest advanced by 37 points and is now 63% finished. The Illinois corn crop is now moving into reproductive growth stages, with 1% of acres now silking. That compares to 8% normally. The condition of the crop improved to 6% very poor to poor, 27% fair, and 67% good to excellent. Soybeans are now blooming on 10% of acres, compared to 12% for the five-year average. Soybean conditions were reported as 5% very poor to poor, 27% fair, and 68% good to excellent, an improvement from last week. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office. Scattered rains and average temperatures continued to aid crop development, and there were 4.9 days suitable for field work during the week. Reported field activities were limited to harvesting hay this week. Topsoil moisture supplies dried out a little and were rated 1% very short, 11% short, 71% adequate, and 17% surplus. Subsoil moisture supplies rated 1% very short, 7% short, 78% adequate, and 14% surplus. Corn condition was rated 84% good to excellent, that's down slightly from the previous week. Soybeans blooming reached 7% this week, that's 11 days ahead of last year and 2 days ahead of the five-year average. While corn condition remained at 81% good to excellent, 1% fell into the very poor category as some isolated reports of hail were received. Some reports of spring wheat acreage turning color were received this week. For the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
My thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across their regions. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us. What do you see in the Midwest for the next week and a half to 10 days or so?
Well, as we go into July, it's going to be about what we would expect in the month of July. Consistently warmer temperatures are coming, especially as we get into this 4th of July weekend and into early next week. There's going to be a little bit of shower and thunderstorm activity this weekend, but generally speaking, it's going to be a warmer, somewhat drier trend from what's left of this week into the beginnings of next week. Now, as we get around the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th of July, does look like we're going to start to see more in the way of moisture circulating around a high in the southern plains that will lead to some shower and thunderstorm activity and better chances of rain. But it's a trend that's warmer and in some areas a bit drier.
The agronomists tell me it takes about 1 inch of rainfall per week in June and July to make a good corn crop. Do you think we're on track to do that this year?
Well, I think we will in some areas. What we see is a little bit of a patchwork that I think is going to be showing up, because we certainly have had a trend of dryness in some areas. If we were to use normal precipitation, climatologically speaking, across the Corn Belt as we get into the month of July into early August, I think a lot of areas are going to end up really close to normal, but I think we'll have few areas that are going to be a little bit drier than average.
Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. We're now joined by Jonathan Kappas, Agricultural Policy Specialist at the U of I. Hey, thanks for being with us, Jonathan. You will be presenting for the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership on Thursday of this week at 11 o'clock. It's the third in a series of webinars. You're going to be talking about consumer demand as it's related to farm products, in particular grains and oil seeds, and how that might be changing and whether there's a possibility that those with some production functions behind them, like cover crops and no-till and such, can be put into the system effectively. What do you think the possibilities are?
Yeah, well, I'm actually pretty happy to be a part of the discussion, and thank you for having me on. You know, my focus, like you said, is trying to connect a couple dots here. And so I think this is a great conversation, this idea of sort of bridging over some of the challenges in front of farmers. And so I'm kind of looking at some of the trends around consumer demand, as well as what we're seeing, you know, from investors in the corporate sector seeking out sustainability, and then applying it to some of the realities, you know, the farm economic realities and the challenges, you know, this sort of gap for adding or the challenges for adding conservation and more sustainable practices, and then thinking through what might be filling that, things like policy in particular. What are the policy implications and the and some of the political movement around this topic, and where we can review what we've done and start to think about what kind of policy changes can really help out, not as the one thing that's going to help or fill the gap or solve the problem, but certainly as one component of that, along with hopefully some market-based solutions around ecosystem services and the like.
Are there any lessons to be learned from the organic transition into the regular pipeline from the 70s, the 80s, into the early 90s when that really began through 2000, and what we now see in regular grocery stores where there is consumer demand for that kind of product?
I mean, I think that's an indicator of the trends and the push from consumers to get a better understanding of it. You know, on one hand, this is a positive development. We have the American consumer becoming much more interested in their food and how it's produced. But at the same time, kind of that point there, you know, you think of the organic transition at the farm level as a cost and a challenge to get through those 3 years to be certified, but then also at the policy level, the amount of time it sort of took to put pieces in place from a policy perspective to get that, and even with those gaps, it was a consumer demand that has been driving a lot of change. So, I think you're right. I think there are lessons from that history as well.
Is there consumer demand for conservation-minded production practices in what I would consider conventional supply chains?
So there is an overall consumer demand for more sustainable production. We also see an overall demand around climate resiliency and risk management issues and around sustainability. And so you're seeing that sort of at the higher level. How that filters down through the supply chain and to the farm gate for corn and soybean production, which is obviously much further removed from the direct consumer. I think we're still trying to sort that out, but it can't be ignored given the direction of these higher level consumer and investor and supply chain company movements.
When you make your Bridging the Gap webinar presentation Thursday at 11 o'clock for the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership, what are the primary points you'll be talking about?
Well, I don't want to give away all the great details, some of which, not to be, you know, procrastinate the last minute, I'm still working out a few of the components, but I think it really is, my goal is to sort of tie this, what we're seeing at these higher levels, tie it to the policies that have been in place and how they are or are not fitting, and then what may be what we're starting to see on the horizon from some of the bills that have been introduced in Congress, and you know, including the hearing last week from the Senate Ag Committee on climate responses, and start trying to think, you know, how might these pieces work together and move together, you know, to help farmers make some of these transitions and advance this effort. So I'm trying my best to kind of tie some of these threads together, and then most importantly, leave questions for a really great panel of experts to answer. So in true academic fashion, my mind will leave hopefully more questions than it answers.
Well, I do have some questions from the things that I have learned over the decades and over the last decade. In fact, I'm wondering if there is a place for policy, farm policy, crop insurance in particular, potentially in this process, whether companies like McDonald's and Anheuser-Busch, both of which I have talked to, who all each have their own kind of water quality strategies that they're trying to work through, and other conservation-minded demands that they're discussing. Can all of those work together to bring some kind of policy to fruition? And one last note, and I heard this in the hallowed halls of Bumford Hall at one point on a discussion, which was that those people that are in places now that can make a difference, the CEOs and others, seem to be more conservation-minded or globally minded about climate change and the planet. And I don't know whether all of those things weave into some policy that reflects back on the farm in some form or not.
So I think the most direct answer I can give is we don't know how, but we can be pretty certain that they will weave back into the policy in some form or fashion. The shifts that you're seeing, consumer demand, obviously, but I think you're pointing one out. Really, some of the shifts you're seeing in the investor and corporate level areas around water quality and water issues, and really, frankly, all of that is tied into climate change. And as we are living through these changes around our climate and what it means for risk at the farm level. So we've seen some examples even here in Illinois with spring planting challenges the last couple of years, but risks to water supply, risks to the food chain, and then obviously, as what I hope isn't much of a precursor or harbinger to it is what we've seen with COVID and the fact that it's disrupted supply chains and created challenges across the board and has sort of really driven home some of the challenges we have in front of us and the needs for policies to adapt and to adjust and to respond to these challenges. So I think we are going to see it. I don't know exactly how it plays out or what the new policies might look like. But it is, and I applaud the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership for really pushing some of the thought on this and raising these kind of questions so that we get everybody thinking about what kinds of responses and efforts we would want to see.
If you'd like to hear more from Jonathan Kappas on consumer demand for sustainably raised row crops, you can do that this Thursday by joining an Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership webinar. You can find it at ilsustainableag.org. Just search for Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership. And you can register for the third in a three-part series on sustainable agriculture. This one, again, on consumer demand for sustainably raised row crops. Jonathan will make his presentation and be joined by Ryan Ciroli. He's the director for row crop sustainability at Cargill, along with the Director of Sustainable Agriculture at PepsiCo, and Carter Morgan, who is a farmer. It should be a really good webinar. Again, you can register today for the Thursday event. It takes place at 11 o'clock Central Time. Find all the details at ilsustainableag.org. And that wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.